Picture a gravel bar somewhere north of Anchorage. No runway markings, no windsock. Just a strip of river rock maybe 800 feet long, bracketed by spruce on one end and moving water on the other. The kind of place where the approach briefing is really just a conversation with yourself about whether you trust your own judgment. Now picture flying into that place from your living room. This is Radio Hangar, I'm Tower, and you're listening to ATIS, the show where I take the week's aviation headlines and tell you what they actually mean for the person holding the yoke. Today, we're going somewhere a little different. We're going to Alaska, sort of. Flying Magazine ran a piece this week about a new mission pack for Microsoft Flight Simulator 2024. It's called Floatplane Pilot, and it drops you into the Alaskan bush with a set of missions built around exactly the kind of rugged seat-of-the-pants flying that most of us will only ever read about. And I want to talk about it. Not just because it's fun, though, it is. I want to talk about what a well-built simulator can and cannot do for you as a real aviator. Because the headline here is, Alaska awaits flight sim pilots. But the headline doesn't tell the whole story. Before we get into it, today's aviation news is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. If you've ever pinned your first solo shirt fragment to a corkboard, you understand the instinct. Some moments deserve a piece of metal in your hand. AviationSoul.com. All right, let's get into it. Here's what you need to know about the Floatplane Pilot Pack. It's an add-on for Microsoft Flight Simulator 2024, the current generation of the sim that a lot of you already have loaded on your machines. The pack centers on floatplane and bush operations in the Alaskan interior and along the coast. Flying Magazine describes it as a taste of rugged bush flying adventure. And from everything in that write-up, that's a fair summary. You get missions, you get scenery built around real Alaskan terrain, and you get aircraft configured for the environment, floats for the water, big tundra tires for the gravel and the grass. Now, if you're a longtime listener, you know I don't usually spend a segment on entertainment software. This isn't a gaming show. But I'm making an exception, and here's why. The line between a video game and a training tool has gotten blurry, and it's worth understanding where that line actually sits. Let me give you the honest version first, because I owe you that a desktop simulator running on a home computer is not an approved training device in the eyes of the Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, unless it's been specifically certificated as one. Microsoft Flight Simulator, in its off-the-shelf form, is not a basic aviation training device or an advanced aviation training device. It's not a flight training device. You cannot log time in it toward a certificate or a rating. If you sit down at your keyboard tonight and fly 40 approaches into that Alaskan gravel bar, none of it goes in your logbook. Full stop. I want that clear before anybody emails me. So the question becomes, if it doesn't count, what's it good for? The answer is more than you'd think. This affects you if you're a student pilot, a rusty pilot, or a current pilot who wants to stay sharp between real flights. Because there's a category of skill that a simulator like this trains extremely well, and there's a category it trains poorly or not at all. Knowing the difference is the whole game. Let's start with what it does well. Procedures. Flows, sequence of operations. When you're setting up a float plane for a glassy water landing, there is a procedure. You establish a specific pitch attitude, you set a specific power setting, you hold that descent rate. Because on truly glassy water, your depth perception falls apart, and you cannot judge your height above the surface by looking at it. Real floatplane pilots will tell you that glassy water has bent more airplanes than rough water ever did, because the surface gives you nothing to see. A simulator can drill that procedure into your hands until it's automatic. The sight picture, the power setting, the discipline of not chasing the surface with your eyes, that transfers. That's real learning. Same with cockpit flows. Where's the fuel selector? What's the sequence for a go-around? How do you configure the airplane for a short field departure off a gravel bar with obstacles at the far end? You can rehearse that 100 times in a chair, and when you finally do it in metal, your hands already know the dance. Procedural memory is procedural memory. The brain doesn't care much whether the practice happened at altitude or at a desk, and then there's decision-making. This is the one people underrate. The Alaskan bush is famous for a specific killer. And it isn't engine failure and it isn't ice. It's the decision to keep going into deteriorating weather. Pilots call it get-there-itis or in the accident reports. Continued visual flight into instrument conditions. It is one of the deadliest patterns in all of general aviation, and it is especially deadly in terrain like Alaska, where the weather closes a valley behind you and there's no room to turn around. A simulator can put you in that scenario with zero physical risk. The ceiling is dropping, the visibility is going, the valley is narrowing, and you have to decide right now whether to turn around while you still can or press on and hope. When you make the wrong call in the sim, the airplane hits the rocks and you feel a small version of the thing you're supposed to feel. Nobody dies, but you learn, in a place in your gut, what that trap looks like as it's closing. That is genuine value, and it costs you nothing but pixels. So that's the upside, and it's substantial. Now the other side of the ledger, because the headline doesn't tell the whole story. Remember, what a desktop sim cannot give you is the seat of your pants. It cannot give you the sink you feel in your stomach when the airplane settles. It cannot give you the real disorientation of a spatial illusion, because your inner ear knows perfectly well you're sitting still in a chair. It can't give you the physical workload of wrestling a light airplane in mountain turbulence, the fatigue, the way your arms get tired, the way a real crosswind loads up the controls. It can't replicate the true consequence of a mistake. And consequence is a teacher that a video game will never fully be. There's a well-documented trap here, and I want to name it directly. It's called negative transfer. That's when a habit you build in the simulator is actually wrong for the real airplane, and you carry the bad habit into the cockpit. The classic example is looking inside. In a lot of home setups, pilots fly heads down, staring at the instrument panel on the screen, because the peripheral cues that a real pilot uses just aren't there. Do that long enough, and you can train yourself to fly by looking at gauges instead of looking outside. In a real airplane, in real bush country, with real terrain coming up to meet you, heads down is how people die. So the same tool that sharpens your procedures can, if you're not careful, dull the exact instinct that keeps you alive. This affects you if you fly a lot of simulator time and not much real time. The fix is simple awareness. Know which skills you're building and which ones you might be quietly eroding. Use the sim for procedures and decisions. Don't let it teach you where to point your eyes. Now, let me connect this to something bigger, because there's an industry angle here that I think matters. The FAA has, over the years, gradually expanded what you can do with approved simulation. There are provisions in the regulations for using aviation training devices toward instrument currency and toward certain training requirements when the device is certificated and when an instructor is involved. That's real, and it's grown, and it's a good thing. Simulation lowers cost, it lowers risk, and it lets you practice emergencies you'd never dare rehearse in a real airplane at low altitude. Engine failures on takeoff, systems failures, the stuff that kills people precisely because they've never practiced it. But there's a difference between certificated training devices and consumer flight sim software, and the gap between them is closing on the technology side, even though it stays wide on the regulatory side. The software running on a good home machine today is, in visual fidelity and in flight modeling, dramatically better than the multi-million dollar simulators of a couple decades ago. The scenery in something like this, Alaska Pack, is built from real terrain data. The weather can be pulled from real conditions. The airplanes are modeled with real performance numbers. It's genuinely impressive. And that raises a question the industry is actively wrestling with. If the consumer tools keep getting better, at what point does some of that capability get folded into the training pipeline in an official way? I don't have that answer, and I'm going to flag that as my opinion rather than reporting. I think we'll see the regulatory framework keep inching toward giving credit for high-fidelity home simulation, probably in narrow, instructor-supervised ways first. But that's me speculating, and I want you to hear it as speculation, not as fact. What is fact is that pilots have always used every tool available to get better. And this is a tool, a serious one, if you use it seriously. Let me bring it back to Alaska specifically, because there's a reason a float plane pack in the Alaskan bush is more than just pretty scenery. Alaska is the hardest general aviation environment in the United States, full stop. The terrain is unforgiving. The weather changes in minutes. There are places where flying is not a hobby. It's the only way in or out, and the accident statistics have historically reflected how demanding that flying is. The FAA has run dedicated safety initiatives focused specifically on Alaska for exactly that reason, including efforts to improve weather reporting infrastructure and to attack that continued flight into bad weather pattern I mentioned earlier. So when a simulator drops you into that environment, even virtually, it's exposing you to the decisions that define the hardest flying there is. The short field off the gravel bar, the glassy water landing, the weather call in the narrowing valley, the density altitude problem on a warm day out of a high strip with a load aboard. These are real skills tied to real accident causes, and practicing the thought process behind them even in a chair is not nothing. Here's the takeaway, And here's what you should actually do with it. If you own Microsoft Flight Simulator and this kind of flying interests you, the Float Plane Pilot Pack looks like a legitimately good time and a legitimately useful procedural trainer. Use it. But use it with your eyes open, treat it as a procedures rehearsal and a decision-making sandbox, which is where it's strong. Do not treat it as a substitute for real stick time, and do not let it train you to fly heads down. If you're a student, fly it alongside your real lessons, not instead of them, and talk to your instructor about what you're practicing so they can catch any bad habits before they set. And if you've never flown a real float plane or a real bush strip, let this be the thing that plants the idea, because the sim is a taste, the real thing, with a certificated instructor beside you on real water with the smell of avgas and the slap of the hull on the surface is the meal. That's the story. A video game. On its face, but underneath it, a conversation about how we train, what transfers and what doesn't, and why the hardest flying in the country is worth understanding even from a chair. My thanks to Flying Magazine for the reporting on the Float Plane Pilot Pack, and to the FAA for the years of Alaska-focused safety work that informs everything I said about that environment. You can find us at RadioHangar.com. I'm Tower. Whether your next landing is on real water or virtual, fly the airplane all the way to the tie down. See you next time.